Hare Krishna. Welcome everyone. This is my first evening Bhagavad Gita class. So today I've been told we're reading from Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, verse number 35. And I think people have copies of the book. So if you'll kindly repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Asanshayam Mahabaho. Mano Durnigraham Chalam. Abhyasena Tu Kaunteya. Vairagena Chagrihyate. Asamshayam Mahabaho. Mano Durnigraham Chalam. Abhyasena Tu Kaunteya. Vairagena Chagrihyate. Asamshayam Mahabaho. Mano Durnigraham Chalam. Abhyasena Tu Kaunteya. Vairagena Chagrihyate. Please chant. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Asamshayam Mahabaho. Mano Durnigraham Chalam. Abhyasena Tu Kaunteya. Vairagena Chagrihyate. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Asanshayam Mahabaho. Mano Durnigraham Chalam. Abhyasena Tu Kaunteya. Vairagena Chagrihyate. Matajis. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Asanshayam Mahabaho. Mano Durnigraham Chalam. Abhyasena Tu Kaunteya. Vairagena Chagrihyate. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Personality of Godhead said, Asamshayam, undoubtedly, Mahabaho, O Mighty Armed One, Mana, the mind, Durnigraham, difficult to curb, Chalam, flickering, Abhyasena, by practice, Tu, but, Kaunteya, O son of Kunti, Vairagena, by detachment, Cha, also, Grihyate, can be so controlled. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Lord Shri Krishna said, O mighty armed son of Kunti, it is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind, but it is possible by suitable practice and by detachment. Please repeat, Lord Shri Krishna said, O mighty armed son of Kunti, it is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind. But it is possible by suitable practice and by detachment. Purport. The difficulty of controlling the obstinate mind, as expressed by Arjuna, is accepted by the personality of Godhead. But at the same time, he suggests that by practice and detachment, it is possible. What is that practice? In the present age, no one can observe the strict rules and regulations of placing oneself in a sacred place, focusing the mind on the Supersoul, restraining the senses and mind, observing celibacy, remaining alone, etc. Thank you. By the practice of Krishna consciousness, however, one engages in 9 types of devotional service to the Lord. The first and foremost of such devotional engagements is hearing about Krishna. This is a very powerful transcendental method for purging the mind of all misgivings. The more one hears about Krishna, the more one becomes enlightened and detached from everything that draws the mind away from Krishna. By detaching the mind from activities not devoted to the Lord, one can very easily learn Vairagya. Vairagya means detachment from matter and engagement of the mind and spirit. Impersonal spiritual detachment is more difficult than attaching the mind to the activities of Krishna. This is practical because by hearing about Krishna, one becomes automatically attached to the Supreme Spirit. This attachment is called Pareshanubhava, spiritual satisfaction. It is just like the feeling of satisfaction a hungry man has for every morsel of food he eats. The more one eats while hungry, the more one feels satisfaction and strength. Similarly, by discharge of devotional service, one feels transcendental satisfaction as the mind becomes detached from material objectives. It is something like curing a disease by expert treatment and appropriate diet. Hearing of the transcendental activities of Lord Krishna is therefore expert treatment for the mad mind, and eating the foodstuff offered to Krishna is the appropriate diet for the suffering patient. This treatment is the process of Krishna consciousness. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalaka Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, I'll try to speak relatively briefly so we can have some time for questions also today. This chapter of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, is one of the most beautiful chapters I find of this particular of this book. It's very wonderful, the whole chapter. If you look at the way in which Krishna and Arjuna interact, in a lot of chapters in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is mostly speaking, and Arjuna might ask a question at the beginning of the chapter, which then propels Krishna to speak the rest of the chapter. In this chapter, there's a very vibrant interaction between Krishna and Arjuna. It's not just one thing Arjuna asks, it's not just one thing Krishna says, but it's a back and forth where Arjuna is trying to work out just how practically he's going to follow what Krishna is proposing in this particular chapter. Every chapter of Bhagavad Gita, as you may know, prescribes a particular kind of yoga practice, some method of linking the individual soul to God. And this particular chapter deals with Dhyana Yoga, which is the physical yoga of meditation. And as you know from attending classes before this, is that Krishna starts off this chapter by giving in one sense, radical definition of a yogi. Instead of defining the yogi as someone who's cut himself off from the world, he says, no, a yogi is someone who keeps engaging in the world, but does so with an attitude of detachment. He says, sa sannyasi cha yogi cha na niragnir na chakriha. That person is the sannyasi, that person is the yogi, not one who lights no fire, he says, or does no work in this world. Then he goes on to explain what most people today think of yoga in terms of a physical process of meditation. Sit down like this on a seat, not too high, not too low. Put the neck and head erect in a straight line. Half close your eyes, stare at the tip of your nose, regulate your breathing, control the mind, practice celibacy, remain silent. All these things Krishna gives for the practice of physical yoga, a process of basically controlling the breath and in this way trying to control the mind and focusing it on the Lord. Once this happens, Krishna describes this whole process, then Arjuna intervenes in this chapter. And he says, Krishna, I don't think I can do this. This is way too difficult. He says, just the previous verse, you read, Chanchalam hi mana Krishna pramathi balavad dhridam. He says, my dear Krishna, this mind is very flickering and very difficult to control. I think to control the mind, vayu riva sudushkaram, is more difficult than controlling the wind itself. So Arjuna, he basically says, I don't think I can do this. I don't think it's practical, the suggestion you're making, to keep the mind silent. Now, Krishna, you see, he doesn't back down. He doesn't say, yeah, you're actually right, let's try a different kind of yoga now. He doesn't. In this verse, he comes right back at Arjuna with a counter-argument. And he says, Arjuna, I agree, right? He says, asamshayam mahabaho. Without a doubt, you're right. The mind, durnigraham, it's very difficult to control the mind. But he says, abhyasena tukonteya. By the process of proper practice and vairagya, detachment, you can do this. What these two things mean, we're going to talk about in just a minute. Okay, but let's move on in this chapter, just looking ahead a little bit. Krishna comes back and says, no, Arjun, you can do it. There's no doubt. You just have to practice. Arjun still doesn't back down, right? This is a back and forth in this chapter. He says to Krishna, he doesn't say, okay, well, I guess I should practice then. And try to become detached. Rather, he comes back and he says, I'm getting even more nervous here. You didn't answer my question, or you did, but you pushed me even harder, and I still don't feel convinced I can do this. So Krishna, what happens to the unsuccessful yogi? Right? This is Arjuna's backup plan. He's asking for us, what's plan B in case this fails? Right? What's going to happen? And Krishna, he says, tell me, what is the destination of that person? Is he lost like a riven cloud, he says, like a single cloud. Sometimes in the sky, you know, it's a beautiful sunny day and you look up and there's like a one little cloud hanging there. It looks so lonely. It cannot give any shade, no water, nothing. It's just somehow the clouds move on and left that one behind. Right? So he's saying, like a riven cloud. And is that person completely lost? Do they have no hope? He's saying, do I have no hope if I can't do this? He's asking very personally. He's very concerned, very worried. And then Krishna comes back with a very soft statement. And he says, don't worry, Arjuna. One who is unsuccessful in the practice of yoga in this life will return in their next life and take a very fortunate birth. He says, they will be born either in a very well-to-do family, or in a family, a very pure family, one that has very good habits, basically a Brahminical family. Both of these provide a facility, a conducive environment, where one can practice spiritual life without too much anxiety. Of course, they can also work the other way. Right? Wealthy families often become materialistic. But the idea here is Krishna's giving us the opportunity, giving us the space. Okay, now you don't have to worry about your physical upkeep, you don't have to worry about where your food is coming from tomorrow. You can focus on the practice of yoga. Or in a pure household where things are already focused spiritually. And Krishna says, if you become unsuccessful after a long practice of yoga, then you take birth in a family of yogis, where it's automatic, you're just practicing. Right? It's just something that you grow up with. And you've already got so much progress in yoga before you even have the conscious ability to make decisions for yourself that I want to be a yogi. You're already practicing yoga. You get, 12 years of free yoga practice without having to put any effort into it. Now, we don't hear back from Arjuna, but you can imagine Arjuna at this point feeling, that's a relief. Right. Okay, at least there's some hope for me. I'm not completely lost. Krishna, though, he comes back, he ends this chapter with one more plea to Arjuna. Right? He's again not giving up. He's saying, okay, you can be unsuccessful and things will still be fine, you can continue in your next life. But don't wait for that. Right? Don't bank on that. You don't know what's going to happen in your next life. So he pushes once more. He says this beautiful verse, this is the second to last verse of this chapter. He says, tapasvibhyo dhiko yogi jnanibhyopi matodhika karmibhyaschadhiko yogi tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. He says, a yogi is greater than the ascetic, greater than the empiricist, and greater than the fruitive worker. He says, it's greater than the tapasvi, greater than the jnani, greater than the karmi. Tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. Therefore, in all circumstances, O Arjuna, be a yogi. So he tells them, don't give up on this process. Try again. But then he ends this chapter with the best instruction of all, where he says, and let me give you a hint. I know what I described in this chapter was quite difficult. And I know you're thinking you might be unsuccessful. And I know I keep pushing you to try harder. But there's one way that you can guarantee to be successful. And then he gives that famous verse. Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamomataha. Of all these yogis, the one who is attached to me in love, in bhakti, and serves me with faith, that is the greatest of all and is most intimately united with me in yoga. So here Krishna is returning to the practice of bhakti, saying, okay, if it's difficult, all everything I've described, just focus on the essence. Right? The essence is, learn how to love me, and I'm going to take care of you. A very powerful ending to a very powerful chapter. Krishna ends by saying, the yogi is greater than the ascetic, greater than the karmi, the fruitive worker, greater than the person seeking knowledge. And of all the yogis, the greatest is my devotee. Right? He creates such a clear hierarchy and such a powerful conclusion to this chapter. It ends with a real strong, you know, bang at the end. It's a beautiful chapter of Bhagavad Gita, this chapter 6, because it does so many things simultaneously. Right? It explains to us the most important aspect of spiritual life, of practice, is how to control the mind. It's explaining us that. And it gives us a hint as to just how difficult spiritual practice really is. With Arjun himself panicking and giving up almost. And then it gives us a very simple and very wonderful solution to the problem as well. Engage in devotional service. Learn to love Krishna and things will be fine. So it's simultaneously the most encouraging and the most daunting chapter. It shows the difficulty of spiritual life and also its simplicity. And it shows really the naturalness of the process that Arjun he's showing just how natural it is to struggle on the spiritual path, to be worried. And the role of the spiritual master in encouraging us on the one hand and pushing us a little bit on the other. Right? Saying, yes, you can do it, it's not so difficult on the one hand, and you gotta try harder. You have to push a little bit more. And this particular verse we're talking about here is Krishna doing the pushing, right? Throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna serves as the role of the spiritual master, and every once in a while, he'll push Arjuna. He'll try to get him out of his comfort zone. You know, there's a professor in my Department of Religious Studies who has a sign on his door. He says, my job is to comfort the disturbed and to disturb the comfortable. Right? to comfort the disturbed and to disturb the comfortable. And that is basically the role of the spiritual master, right? Of any teacher, is those who are very, complacent, relaxed. Life is good, I don't need to think, don't need to use my brains, don't need to try for anything, I've got everything I need. Who are too satisfied. The role of the spiritual master or of any teacher is to say, wake up, you gotta try harder, you gotta push, you're not gonna accomplish anything like this. And For that person who's in too much anxiety and suffering because of that, because they're all confused and they don't know what they're supposed to be doing, it's the role of the spiritual master to say, come here, take shelter, everything will be okay, Krishna's there, he loves everyone and he'll take care of you. And you see Krishna doing both things in Bhagavad Gita, back and forth, back and forth. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna starts with a little bit of a push. He says, Ashochyanan Vashochastam, Pragnyava Adangshya Bhashase. Oh Arjun, you think you're so smart, right? But you actually don't know the basics of what is living and what is dead. The difference between a living person and a dead body. It's a little bit of a slap to Arjun. And then at some point in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjun himself is confused. He says, Krishna, I don't understand what you're saying. You're saying all confusing things. He says in chapter 3 and chapter 5, you seem to be contradicting yourself. And Krishna becomes a patient teacher. He doesn't chastise him. Oh, you have no brains. You don't think. Don't you understand? This is a basic point. He becomes very kind and he says, oh, it's okay. Let me explain again. And he repeats his instructions to try to be clear. Then here, Arjuna expresses anxiety again. I don't accept what you're saying. I don't believe it. I don't understand it. But this time, Krishna doesn't become soft. He pushes again. He says, no, Arjun, don't give up. You can do this. You have to practice. Have you tried? Have you actually put some effort into this? You can do it. Then again, later on in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about the divine and demoniac natures. And Arjun becomes really worried. And Krishna says, don't worry, Arjun. Don't worry. You are born of the divine nature. So I'm telling you all this, but don't panic. Okay? He's again acting, comforting the disturbed. Then again, he disturbs the comfortable. Like this, back and forth in Bhagavad Gita. You see Krishna sometimes telling Arjuna, it's okay, don't worry. Name bhakta pranashyati, my devotee will never perish. Yoga kshema vahamyaham, I'll carry what you lack and preserve what you have. And other times, he's chastising, or he's reprimanding, or he's telling Arjuna off and saying, no, you don't understand, no, you're not behaving properly. What is this? And so on. And that's the role of the spiritual master that we see Krishna playing, is giving both things at the same time. Here in this verse, Krishna is pushing back with two very important points. He says, the mind, despite its obstinacy, can be controlled by two things. Abhyasa, by practice, and vairagya, by detachment. By practice and by detachment. Now, if you think about this, right, practice and detachment. Practice is basically a form of attachment. This is the point Prabhupada is making in the purport here. Practice means that you dedicate yourself to something and work on it over and over again. Right? That's practice. And at the same time, he's saying vairagya, through detachment, by disengaging yourself. By engaging yourself and by disengaging yourself. Both back and forth are necessary. Now you say, well, this is a contradiction. So Prabhupada explains in the purport. He says, what does this mean? By attaching oneself to Krishna and detaching oneself from what is not related to Krishna. Those two processes, when they go hand in hand, then they become perfect. Then we're able to control the mind very nicely by repeated and regulated practice. And he's specifically emphasizing this point of practice of hearing about Krishna. Nashta prayeshva bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. By continuously practicing hearing about Krishna, we can get rid of the mind's unstable nature and all the different attachments and things that make it so unstable. Now, both of these elements we have to hold together. And each one serves to nourish the other side. Our practice, our engagement, helps us become detached. And our detachment helps us engage in Krishna's service better. Both go hand in hand, like two tracks of a railway. If you have one or the other, one without the other, then we become in a very dangerous situation. If you have just detachment from this world without attachment to Krishna, what happens? Prabhupada is explaining in the purport. Do you remember? What happens if we have just detachment from everything around us? We reject everything, and yet we don't accept, we don't become attached to Krishna. What happens? What's the problem? Yes, we become impersonalistic. Prabhupada is saying this impersonalistic detachment, very difficult to do, very problematic. Because we give up the world, but we don't have anything positive to put in its place. And so we end up becoming very nihilistic, rejectionist. It becomes actually a very depressing circumstance, where the whole process is simply rejection. Give this up. This is bad. This is bad. This is bad too. And this will also trap you. And don't eat this, and don't drink that, and don't look at this, and don't listen to that. And it becomes, it can lead to actually what's basically spiritual depression. Right? And impersonalism, where there's nothing to look forward to. On the other hand, if we think we have attachment to Krishna, we believe this, but we don't have detachment from the material world, from sense gratification, then what's the problem? Yeah, it becomes sahajya. It becomes a semblance. It becomes a semblance of devotional sentiment, which actually becomes, we become pretenders, basically. Krishna describes this earlier in Bhagavad Gita. We become pretenders because we're still, our mind is still attached to this idea of how can I enjoy, and yet we think we're attached to Krishna. But really the focus is still us. How can I enjoy nicely? So both of these extremes, attachment to Krishna without detachment from the material world, leads to sahajya, leads to pretense basically. And detachment from the material world without attachment to Krishna leads to a spiritual suicide. It leads to depression leading to spiritual suicide, which is destruction of one's own self. Because ultimately you end up rejecting so much that you have nothing to even create your own identity with. No sense of self even. And that's terrible also. So both of these things go together. And Prabhupada explains that we can measure our attachment to Krishna by seeing to what extent am I no longer attached to the temporal pleasures of the senses. The things that make the mind mad, right? As Prabhupada is saying, the mad mind. And we can see how much detached we are from genuinely from the material world by how attached we are to Krishna. And this gives us a very practical way to measure our spiritual progress. Sometimes we feel, we attend aarti or we participate in kirtan, we look at the deities and we feel a surge of attraction to Krishna. And then it goes away. And we leave the temple, we can't maintain it anymore. And we think, I gotta go back to the temple, I have to see the deities again. But in between that 1 week or 2 weeks or whatever it is, we're down, the mind is going crazy again. Why? Because that attachment to Krishna was evoked, but the detachment from the material world was still not there. And so the practice of bhakti is meant to cultivate both things side by side. And Prabhupada explains it here as the medicine and the diet. So nice. Medicine and diet. When we're ill for some reason, then two things are important. One, we have to take the medicine that's prescribed to us. Okay, that's very, very important. The antibiotics or whatever medicine we've been given. The second thing is we have to create an environment conducive to our healing. That means adjusting our diet, adjusting our sleep. Perhaps we have to take more rest. Adjusting the temperature, perhaps we feel cold or we need to keep ourselves warm by wearing more clothing. So one is the medicine, the other is environmental adjustments, so that that medicine can work in the best possible, most effective manner. And this is the wonderful combination of the holy name of Krishna, that's the medicine. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sings, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's words, saying, Eneche oshadhi maya nashi baro lagi. Eneche oshadhi maya. I've come bringing this oshadhi, this medicine for you. Oshadhi Maya. It's the medicine for this illusion that we're in. Nashi Baru Lagi. It can destroy it completely. Shei Hari Nama Mantra Lao Tumi Magi. Just accept this wonderful holy name which I've brought to you. This is Lord Chaitanya speaking 500 years ago. He appears, Krishna himself appears, to give us the medicine, like a pharmacist says, this is the medicine that will work for your condition. Right? This is perfect for you. Take this. And then, with that holy name, that medicine, comes alongside of it our Krishna conscious lifestyle. It means the service that we perform for Krishna. By eating only food that's been offered to Krishna, we control the tongue. Right? By engaging in devotional service, by associating with devotees and finding some way in which we can practically serve Krishna. By cooking for Krishna, by cleaning for Krishna, by offering what we earn to Krishna, by associating with devotees, all of those things put together. So you have the medicine and you have the diet. And these two things put together make us healthy very, very quickly. Either one of them will be good. It helps. But the effect is going to be a little slower if we leave one off and don't take the other. The medicine is very effective, but it'll take a little bit longer. We might have a relapse, for example, if we continue pushing ourselves too hard or we stand outside in the cold when we have a fever or something. It's going to take a little time. But eventually it'll work. Eventually it'll come together. So I'll stop here. We have just a couple minutes left. If there's any questions or comments. Yes, Guy? Okay. If the medicine and diet are not really working for us. Okay. That's a good question. Then we have to examine, are we taking the medicine properly? And do we need to make adjustments to our diet? It's like any procedure. If the medicine is not working well, properly, what do? Suppose the doctor prescribes the medicine. You take it for a week, as you're supposed to, the entire course of antibiotics, and it doesn't work. What do? You go back to the doctor, right? So this is why the role of the spiritual master is so important. This is what Arjuna is doing in this chapter. He's saying, Krishna, this medicine isn't working. I don't think it'll work. He goes back to Krishna. So Krishna says, this is how you have to do it. So, This is the role of the spiritual master, becomes so important. Because there are times in life where we feel the medicine isn't working. And we can go back to the spiritual master and say, please tell me, what do I need to do? Right? And he'll make some adjustments. He'll say, look, you're chanting the holy name, but you're not chanting purely. Are you doing your rounds in between all your other activities without thinking about it? Oh, maybe. Oh, okay. That's the problem. Right? So he'll say, oh, you're taking the medicine at the wrong time, or you're not focusing properly, or you're mixing it with some other things. Right? Your chanting is not pure. Or perhaps some diet needs to be adjusted. Right? Are you eating lots of food that is not Krishna Prasad, maybe? Or are you associating with people who are not dedicated to Krishna? And so he'll see what the adjustment is, and he'll help us pinpoint it. If we don't have any, then we should find one. Right? Then we should find one. At least find someone who can serve in that capacity. In other words, gurus comes in many forms. There's the instructing spiritual master and the initiating spiritual master. If we don't have the initiating spiritual master, we should at least have an instructing spiritual master. That's very, very important. So we find a senior devotee who serves in that way for us. And we go and we take their advice and say, what can I do to make an adjustment? To make this work better. Anything else?
Nobody else? Oh, and maybe just a question. Wait, it seems like so difficult to follow Krishna's advice. And wait, it's so difficult. You look at our Krishna mindset.
Yeah, because we've been cultivating this mind, protecting it, pampering it for thousands of lifetimes. It's our most valued possession. We've been investing everything we have into this mad, mad mind. Right? And now we're asked to give it up. The mind, it's like a spoiled brat, like a spoiled child. it puts up a very bad tantrum, yells and screams and throws things around because it's used to getting its way. If you give in to a child every time he asks, then he'll learn that if I just scream loud enough, I'll get what I want. And now for the first time, as devotees, we're telling the mind, you can scream all you want, but you're not getting that if it's not good for you. And so naturally, it's going to be a little bit of a painful process, but it can be cured. It can be trained. Like any child, the mind can be trained nicely. So our time is up, and devotees are here for kirtan. We'll pause at this time, and thank you all very much for your attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Sri Radha Gopinath ki jai.